Matthew 24, verses 43 through 51. That's our text. Here we're going to see Jesus first compare his second coming to the stealth and unexpectedness of a thief robbing your house. It's a frequent comparison. You find this similar comparisons in Luke and in 1 Thessalonians by Paul, and then in 2 Peter by Peter, and in the Revelation by John. And so in verse 43 says, "But know this, that if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into." It's obvious that a thief does not announce the moment of his coming. If you knew the moment, you'd be ready and you'd be waiting to prevent him. So then in verse 44, "Therefore you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect." When there's a series of robberies, you take extra precautions. I remember, especially here in these like smaller, we would still consider our area a rural area, where people like to say they leave their door unlocked, you know, and stuff like that. And then every now and then some heinous crime takes place, and until they get to the bottom of it, you know, then doors get locked, when the people are on a little bit of an extra precaution. And so the idea here is that on the one hand, if you knew when the thief was coming, you'd take precautions. And the events of the last half of the Great Tribulation are like that, in the sense that they're announcing the coming of the Lord, and they're calling upon men on the earth to be ready to receive him. And so it's a very simple analogy just to say it's foolish to see all these things happening in the tribulation and not to be ready for the Lord to come back. Obviously, you know, if there was a thief in your neighborhood robbing cars every night, you put your car in the garage. You know, you'd sleep in the back seat with a shotgun, usually around here is what would really happen. Or put your dog, you'd get a junkyard dog and put him in the back seat. You'd take some precaution. And so in this context, when he says be ready, it would be the equivalent of being saved. That's how you're ready for the second coming of the Lord. I mean, you get saved. Now, from thief to master, Jesus presents another analogy. So in the first analogy, Jesus, in a sense, is the thief, not in the sense that he's evil or doing anything wrong, but in the sense of the unexpectedness of the moment of his coming. And we talked about that the last time, that even though you can have a general idea of the moment of his coming, you can't know the exact moment for a lot of different reasons. And so now he moves to a completely different analogy. In verse 45, he says, "Who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his master made ruler over his household to give them food in due season?" Most modern households are made up only of immediate and sometimes extended family members, or most American households, I should say. Jesus was referencing something a little bit different. He identifies a household in which there is a master and his family, as well as servants or slaves. In the analogy, he now is the master and has gone on an extended trip, leaving a certain servant, usually called a steward, in charge in his place. And so the Lord is the master. Obviously, he left the earth at his ascension, as his disciples saw him taken up into heaven. The two witnesses there said he was coming in like manner. And so this whole time that Jesus has been gone to heaven, seated at the right hand of the Father, is like a master being gone, leaving others in charge, giving others responsibilities. And each person is to see themselves as a steward. Of course, this has its primary application to the Great Tribulation, to people living through that. But since this same analogy is used of us in the church age, we can glean some things from it too. He says he wants the steward to give those in the household food in due season. That's really just the basic level of care and responsibility. The first thing you think of when you're taking care of some, people is that they have to eat. It's basic survival. And so it's probably summarizing the general oversight of all of the details of the household. It means that you're responsible for everything that takes place. So if you're a steward, he says here, you want to be a faithful and wise one, because that steward is described in verse 46 as blessed. Blessed is that servant whom his master, when he comes, will find so doing. As I said, this is the second coming and the end of the seven-year great tribulation, but the application works for the rapture as well. Jesus, we believe, is coming imminently, and we ought to be ready. Readiness, of course, as I just said, means saved. But since you are saved, you will also produce fruit as you serve the Lord. In this case, he says, overall, you will be faithful and you will be wise. Faithfulness and wisdom are more than just outward manifestations of salvation. They are more than just duty and responsibility. They bring us blessing. And so I like that. I was really meditating upon that in the last couple of days. He says, if you're a faithful, wise servant who is waiting for Jesus to return, you will be blessed. I want to be blessed. Don't you want to be blessed? I mean, happy spiritually. It doesn't mean I'll be blessed financially. It doesn't mean I'll be blessed materially, that everything's going right in my life. But it means that I will be blessed in the sense of my relationship with the Lord. And so if I want to be blessed, I want to be faithful with the life that God has given me. I want to dedicate it to Him. I want to use it to serve Him. I want to, I guess, know where I'm supposed to be doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And that's an important thing. I was talking to a young couple the other day, and I said, really, you know, they were all over the map in terms of different concepts and ideas and all that. And I said, you know, it doesn't seem like you know where you're supposed to be, because once you decide, hey, this is where God has me, this is the career, this is the city, this is the place, and you've been led to that place, you have a confidence about that, then some days you're going to abound, some days you're going to be abased, you're going to have blessing, you're going to have buffeting, but you overall are going to be blessed because you know you're where God wants you. And whatever's happening in your life is God working in your life, and He'll work all things together for good because you love Him and are called according to His purpose. There's nothing worse, really, than wondering if you're in the right place. And I said, hey, this is your problem. You don't know if you're in the right place. And so everything that happens, if it's not a good thing, then you wonder if you're in the right place. And you can't go through life like that. You know, you have to have that settled first. So be faithful with the life God has given you, and figure out where He wants you in terms of dedicating yourself to Him, and then exercise wisdom over the resources that God has given you. Wisdom, of course, comes from above as we ask God for it. It's the wisdom of the Lord, not the wisdom of the world, which can sometimes be tricky for us because we want to act and react a certain way. But the Bible wants us to act and react a completely different way than the world. When we do that, we initially seem weak and foolish, but God uses the foolish things of the world to confound the wise. And so we have to be content and committed to walk in the wisdom of God. So if you're not feeling blessed, then you should take a look at your faithfulness. You know, sometimes all of us were just not as faithful in the things of the Lord as we once were, or that we need to be. And I don't think that is some kind of huge criticism. I just think it's honest. You know, I mean, are we really being faithful with the things that God has called us to? And look at your wisdom. Is it your wisdom, or is it the Lord's wisdom? Talking to David Brooks the other day, and he was in a conversation with somebody at work, and they're just in a horrible place. She's a Christian, but she's just in a horrible place because she fell away from the Lord, made wrong choices. And so now, you know, the Lord is getting her back on track, but she has to reap some of the consequences, you know, of those things. I mean, sometimes some things you do, they have consequences. And the Lord will get you out of it. He gives you that second chance. So if you're not feeling blessed or being blessed, then you're probably not faithful and you're probably not exercising God's wisdom. So then he says in verse 47, assuredly, I say to you that he will make him ruler over all his goods. Promotion is usually desirable, not always. I mean, you know, just quite honestly, sometimes you don't want to promote. You're happy doing what you're doing. And, you know, I see this with the cops all the time at different agencies because, you know, once you go from an officer to more of an administrative position, a lot of guys just don't like that, you know. And so they stay officers for their entire career because they want to be out on the street, driving, making a difference. They don't want to be pushing paper. So I understand. But in this case, we're using it in the sense that promotion is a good thing. If you're a steward, you know, and you do a good job, then your master will give you more to do. Here, Jesus is referring to giving the believers who survived the Great Tribulation responsibilities in his earthly kingdom. For us, it reminds us of the very real principle that if we are faithful in little things, God can give us more things to be steward over. We should always be desiring more, but only after we've been faithful in our prerequisites. And this is a tough thing for us because, and I think our personalities fit in here sometimes. You know, some people are just really chill and mellow. Other people are kind of go-getters. But whatever, you know, whoever you are, you have to be faithful in little things before God will give you more to do. And the timing belongs to God, too. I mean, it doesn't do you any good to say, well, God, I've been faithful in these little things for a month or a year or a decade. That's God's business in terms of the timing. One thing I've noted with just using the example of people in ministry who I deal with a lot, or people wanting to go into missions or ministry, full-time ministry, for a long time, it seems like God isn't doing it. He's not, you know, opening up doors and there's always this frustration that sets in with people, you know. And then all of a sudden, one day, some big opportunity opens up. And the thing is, are you ready for that? Or have you pushed yourself through another window, as it were, you know, trying to make your own opportunity? So again, know where you're supposed to be, doing what you're supposed to be doing, and God will reward you. In the meantime, if our overall philosophy is to just do everything as unto the Lord, if I never get promoted, if I get to a point where this is all I ever do, if I do it as unto the Lord, praise the Lord. What's wrong with that? Because I'm doing it for the Lord, with the Lord. I need to learn to be content in that. Verse 48, if that evil servant says in his heart, my master is delaying his coming, and begins to beat his fellow servants and to eat and drink with drunkards. The evil servant represents non-believers at the second coming. They too are stewards in that God has given them life and the opportunity to be saved. The Lord is gone. He's in heaven. He says, look, my common grace is on everyone. They have life and the opportunity to be saved. How are they doing with that opportunity? He mentions assaulting others and gluttony, and this really, in our analogy, stands for selfishness and self-indulgence. A person who is not a Christian, a worldly person, in many different ways assaults other people because you're selfish and you use other people as a means to an end. You may not physically assault them, but you assault them in other ways. And then just the indulgence of our life, if you're not a believer, especially if you don't know the Lord, if you're not living for heaven, you're living for right now, and you want to get as much as you can. You want to have the bigger house, the bigger car, more cars, all the toys, that kind of a thing. And nothing wrong with enjoying those things, but sometimes it becomes an indulgence. And we all know people who are captivated by those kinds of things. Even after many merciful proofs during the great tribulation of the Lord soon coming, they will remain hardened against his love and grace. Verse 50, the master of that servant will come on a day when he is not looking for him and in an hour he's not aware of. Read the Revelation, and it's hard to believe that many will be unaware of their eternal danger. Nevertheless, the Lord will return and their opportunity to repent will be gone. Verse 51, he'll cut them in two and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites. There should be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Caught my eye that he mentioned the hypocrites. It means that these folks we're talking about are confirmed in their unbelief. They're not making a religious pretense. They're not hypocrites. They're not acting piously and thinking they're going to be saved in the end. They have rejected Jesus Christ. They say, you know, we're not trusting in anything for salvation. We believe that this is all going to pass. I don't know what those angels are doing flying through heaven and all these disasters that are clearly the hand of the Lord. you know, science will figure it out, or, you know, the chimpanzees, I guess, that have taken over Spain, you know, it'll be Planet of the Apes or something like that. They have no religious pretense. Cut him in two is a graphic statement describing their death. Not necessarily literal, it just means that they will be subject to physical destruction, obviously. On a spiritual level, it reminds me of the comment by the writer to the Hebrews that God and God alone can divide between the soul and the spirit. His judgment will be perfect and right. Everyone who rejects Christ will get just what he or she deserves. Right now, God is merciful and long-suffering. When Jesus returns in his second coming, his long-suffering will end, his mercy will be over, and judgment will fall. Weeping and gnashing of teeth is a biblical description of hell. It portrays inconsolable grief and unremitting torment. So there's an internal emotional component to it, and then there's a physical component to it, and obviously very horrible. There's an old fable that goes like this. Three devils were coming to the earth to finish their apprenticeship. They presented to Satan their plans to tempt and ruin men. The first said, "I will tell men that there is no God." Satan said, "That will not delude very many, for they know there is a God." The second said, "I will tell men there is no hell." Satan answered, "You will deceive few that way. Men know that there is a hell." The third said, "I will tell men that there is no hurry." God's "Go," said Satan, "and you will ruin men by the thousands." And I think that's very potent in the sense that no one's really in a hurry to meet the Lord. It's not a small thing, by the way, to say that Jesus is not coming today or for several years because you have adopted a system of prophecy that puts the rapture in the middle of the tribulation or at the end of the tribulation. And this is something that I don't think we think about very often when we're talking about, hey, is the rapture pre, post, or mid-trib? If you're anything other than a pre-tribulation rapture, you say to people, Jesus is coming, but not at least for 3.5 years, and that's if the Antichrist signs a peace treaty today. And so be ready for him to come. If you're not ready for the imminent return of Jesus Christ, then you're not really... I mean, you're telling people that they have time to wait. And I don't think that really... Obviously, there's a lot of reasons theologically we believe in the pre-tribulation rapture. This is a very logical reason why any other timing of the rapture makes no sense, because you would be telling people they have plenty of time to get their life right. You know, you'd have to at least see somebody who's the candidate for the Antichrist, and there'd have to be a peace treaty and all these kinds of things falling into place, and then you could get saved. So let's just realize that the Lord could come back any moment and live accordingly.